All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, April 24th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Finish swallowing, buddy, and be ready to talk. We're ready to get this thing rolling. You told me you were ready. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I wasn't swallowing.
All right, here we go. DFSR.com is the site.
DFSR.com. I still have peanuts in my mouth. I'm going to swallow them in 1 second.
DFSR.com/MLB is the site or the URL to get a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Still have NBA rolling to the end of the playoffs and then MLB in full force. We have some dev updates coming in like probably the next month where we're going to be putting out some new projections with upside and floor calculations, which we're pretty excited about. So go check that out. Free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month and you're all good to go. Today, Tuesday, I don't know why the baseball schedule this year has been screwed up. I don't know if it's like I'm just noticing it more this year than other years, but today we have like a bunch of games start. Like,
yeah, that 5 like, p.m. slate.
5 p.m. and then 6:10, 6:35, and 6:40. I'm just going to skip those. Like, they're not even available on DraftKings. So DraftKings kind of got, I don't know if they got smart or what with this, but they typically don't really support these kind of, I don't call it off-brand sort of slates. And then FanDuel, they're there. So you can play an early only one that starts at 5, but I think we're just going to, for our purposes today, just sort of move past that one. And I mean, as always, we have the projections and lineups up for those slates, but I don't think it's warranted to talk about on the podcast, and we'll concentrate on the main slate of games. There's some interesting pitching stuff going on here today in that I'm wondering, like I said, I have a couple thoughts. One, let's just start with Kent Maeda because I have a Dodger thought, and then we're going to go into some of these other guys. So yesterday, Walker Buehler, he is a prospect for the Dodgers. He comes out, makes his debut. Where are we with the Dodger pitch count here? Because I kind of avoided Buehler a little bit yesterday because I was like, well, the Dodgers are like they're the craziest with this. The guy had never thrown more than 80 pitches up into the minors because I researched this yesterday in any game in the minors, and then comes out and throws 90 in his opening day start, in his like first start. And then we look at Kent Maeda, a guy that the pitch counts had sort of been, it seemed like he'd been on a short lease, and then he threw over 100 pitches last game. Like, where do we stand? Are the Dodgers getting away from this pitch count problem? Because there was a big issue with them last year. Where do we stand? Because I think last year we were very conservative with some of their projections, and now I'm wondering if they're just getting away from that philosophy. I don't really know where to land with some of these Dodger pitchers.
Yeah, it's tricky with Maeda. So basically what's happened for him in his first three starts are he went out there, threw 90 pitches opening day, which is great. Or his opening day, and then 65 pitches against Arizona. And I think one of the things the Dodgers are picking up on, which is actually quite smart, I remember reading an article on this on Fangraphs some time ago, like probably 10 years ago at this point. Maybe it was even Baseball Prospectus, but the idea was that long innings are really what are the death of a pitcher's arm in the long run. And so he threw 65 pitches through two innings, and it obviously wasn't going terribly. I mean, he had given up two runs, but it wasn't going great either. And so they just pulled him. And I think that's a totally reasonable decision. I mean, knowing that that's in play for the Dodgers is also good to know, I suppose. Then he goes out and throws 106 pitches in five innings against San Diego at San Diego, which you're not hoping for. But he did register the 10 Ks there. So I think when it comes to Maeda, I would project something like that, 95 to 105 pitches here. How many innings that'll be good for, it's not totally clear to me, but I think the plan is to, you know, pitch him around there. And the thing about Maeda too, and you're not asking about this right now in terms of his viability as a play today, but that's still a pretty reasonable number of pitches on the $9,100 price tag, given the price and matchup.
Yeah, so with that being said then, is he just the cash game play? Like right now when we run lineups, he is coming in to top FanDuel lineups pretty much at 100% rate. I mean, when I say 100%, I mean when we run 25 lineups, he's in 92% of them. So that's basically pushing him to the top of the pitching food chain, it looks like. And the sort of the same thing, I think, actually DraftKings might even be more set in stone where he's coming in. He's coming into 100% of the lineups there at only 9,300. With the matchup against Miami, we know that they're not much of an offense. Buehler didn't have much problem with them. Now he's an electric arm, so he is like a real prospect, I guess I should say. But like, you know, Miami is just not a good team. The Dodgers coming here as -260-ish favorites coming into the game. Do you think we just see Maeda as the chalk play, and do you think it's correct?
It's hard to believe that we don't see him as the chalk play simply because there's so few options on this slate. I mean, when you're going down trying to find actual good pitchers, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are kind of like fine. You see a lot of games with like an 8.5 total with a -120 money line or something, but nothing even close to the Maeda being favored -247, a 7.5 line against Miami. So, I mean, we talked at length about Miami's even more anemic offense this season. That's borne out completely. So I think that really drives it as much as anything else, because especially on DraftKings, you just have to pitch two pitchers. Who are you even to throw out there? You know, like the only other options I really see, I mean, I guess there's three of them. You got Robbie Ray and Vince Velasquez facing one another in Philly, so not a super pitcher's ballpark, but at least the total is reasonably low. And then you got Charlie Morton. And basically with Morton, you just have to be a believer in the improved stuff this season. And, you know, maybe that's the reality for Morton. It's not the easiest matchup in the world against the Angels, but, you know, he is 3-0 with a 0.72 ERA, so I suspect you'll see some ownership there as well. But, yeah, for my money, I think Maeda is the safest play.
Yeah, the Ray, and I'm going to talk about DraftKings here because they're in the same price tier. Like Ray's 11,000, and then Morton is 11,200. You know, let's talk about Ray first. So Ray, when you look at his peripherals, he's striking out the strikeout numbers are just beyond elite. I mean, right now 13 Ks per nine, and he's following up a 12 K per nine season. 11. He seems like he's
a true talent. 12 Ks per nine guy. I mean, he's got stuff like you read about. It's truly incredible.
The other problem is, though, he's a true talent four walks per nine guy. And
that's true.
And right now that's even worse, where he's walking close to six per nine. Now, the ERA is up toward five. The xFIP is much lower, probably because the strain rate's a little high. The BABIP's right in his career numbers. But do you take I guess the math problem here is, do you take Ray's K upside, knowing that you're going to have to buy in on some of the walks, and he's probably, let's just call it a better matchup. The matchup against Philly is better than the matchup against Los Angeles. Or do you take Morton, who the K numbers are there, the walk numbers aren't as bad, but he clearly has a worse matchup here because facing him against Trout and the Angels, especially at the top of that order, seems like a problem. Now, they're not going to have Ohtani in the lineup because Ohtani's pitching, but that actually just lowers the money line for Morton because he actually has a good matchup going the other way. I mean, where do you land on where this math problem ends up? Because you're really not going to roster them both together. It seems like one of the two would be the play, unless you're really going to save money and go down to some other pitchers we could talk about in a second and try to pay up for Coors. But if you had to pick between the two of them right now, do you take the less walks, worse matchup with Morton, or the higher K upside, knowing that he could be bounced early because the pitch count gets too high with Ray?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I guess I prefer Ray. Again, National League ballpark matters here, getting to go up against a pitcher slot, especially for a guy like Robbie Ray, is an automatic strikeout. Morton, he's kind of a tough one to put a finger on because this is now 2 years of this just ridiculous strikeout rate for him. He had 10 Ks per nine through 146 innings pitched last year, so increasing it to 12, it's probably not exactly where he'll land by the season's end, but if he really reduces the walks and is really a 10-5 K per nine guy, he's just an elite pitcher, and you're not paying anywhere near elite pitcher prices for him. You know, it's always tricky with these 34-year-old guys and them turning a corner. But, you know, we've seen it before. You know, he could be that second coming of R.A. Dickey's mid-30s type thing. So, I think ultimately I just trust the math here. The math right now is looking like Robbie Ray. I do think that the higher consistency on the strikeouts. Strikeouts are just so important for daily fantasy purposes. And again, the National League ballpark, I think ultimately probably tips it in his favor, but I could see a strong argument that Morton is has a higher floor today.
Yeah, you get to elite numbers when you are a high strikeout, high ground ball guy, and that's exactly what Morton is. Like you are, he's striking out 12 per nine with a 60% ground ball rate. I mean, that's
it's pretty insane.
You're going to start talking about like Cy Young Award stuff. Like if that's the thing that kind of maintains, because you get the best of both worlds. You get the strikeouts, and then when you get the guys on base, you just get double plays. Like, this is where guys are able to, like, Alex Wood is kind of like this too. Like, he's able to maintain low pitch counts because you just really never get, with that repertoire, it's very difficult to get yourself in a lot of trouble, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, typically you have to trade one for the other because typically people get a lot of strikeouts by pitching up in the zone, and up in the zone means more fly balls and hard hit balls out of the park. And if you can generate ground balls on your hard hit balls, that's not so bad at all.
Right, so this is going to be an interesting one. Probably going to end up where we land on a number of innings projected, and then where the money line ends up. Because Ray actually going, you know, just talking about another possible just guy to maybe throw out there. Ray doesn't have a great matchup here with Vincent Velasquez on the mound the other way. He's been excellent this season so far. 21 innings and 4 starts. So the innings per start aren't really there, but the strikeouts are over 10 per nine. And this is a guy who's flashed it in the past. Like he is a prospect and has dealt with some injury issues in the past, keeping the walks way down this year, which is really his key. He's been almost 3.5 walk per nine guy, down to 2. Again, only 21 innings, but only 2 walks per nine so far this season. Could you see taking a discount on a guy like Velasquez, because right now the money line on the Arizona Philly game is basically even, like minus 105 each. And I don't know if it's worth it to just pay, like on DraftKings, just take Velasquez at 7,000 and then maybe roster some of these Coors bats or some of the, because there are going to be a bunch of stacks that we can talk about today, but specifically Coors, because that run line is likely going to be much higher than everyone else. Do you see just maybe paying all the way down, saving 4,000 off of Ray to Velasquez? Is Velasquez's makeup worth that, I don't know, 35% discount, whatever it is, 40% discount that you're getting on a guy with pretty good peripherals?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if Vegas is to be believed, this is basically a pick 'em at a 7.5 money line. So they think they're going to give up an equal number of runs. And then you're paying $4,000 for Ray for just the increase in strikeouts. So sure, right now, our projection system is leaning heavily Vasquez in that pitcher two slot. And actually just even dabbling on a little Luke Weaver against the Mets for the other spot. It's not really, I didn't even for some reason register that $11,000 price tag. That I think is almost a non-starter for him there.
Well, what do you think about Weaver, too? Because he was the other guy I was going to mention. He spent last year 60 innings, 10.7 strikeout per nine. This year, down to about 8.5, which lines up. Nah, he was a little bit more than a strikeout inning guy in the minors. The matchup against the Mets doesn't seem great. If you had to, I don't know. You mentioned that the system's kind of going back and forth between Vasquez and Weaver. Do you have a sense of which one you like? Because Weaver, you get more of a money line favorite here, minus 166 opening against the Mets with an 8 over under. Does that sway you enough to maybe, you know, when you look at these guys and trying to decide where to land on one or the other, are we looking more money line? Does it have to do with everything kind of boiled together, or if you're trying to pick like one stat to really flip the coin and say, let's say right now they were coming in about 50% of lineups, which is what they are. It was maybe just going back and forth based on the matchup and stuff. Is there a certain number or something that would end up making you land on one rather than the other?
Well, normally it would be innings pitched. Like if a guy is more reliably going to go deeper into games, I'm very, very interested in that. In a case like this, you know, I don't know that one pitcher has a clear edge in that department. And this is actually kind of the interesting thing about Weaver versus Velasquez, because, you know, in kind of the rubric of, because right, so just the reason I keyed in on innings pitch to start is if two teams have a same implied run total, but one guy's going to be out there longer, obviously I want to prioritize him. After that, I look at the matchup, try to figure out, is there one team that's just going to be a lot more likely to give my guy a really hard start where he's just going to be terrible? I don't know that one team has the advantage here in that department either. This early in the season, I'll also try to look at the game logs for the respective guys to see if maybe one or the other had a harder run of it so far. One thing that's interesting about Weaver's line so far is that a lot of his line overall comes from four innings pitched against the Cubs, where he gave up 6 runs on 9 hits and 3 strikeouts at Wrigley. So I, you know, a lot of what looks like, oh, he's kind of off to a tough start to the season is simply that one game, you know. We also, and I don't know that this matters much because the first start of the season is such a weird one for so many pitchers, but his first start of the season was against these Mets, and he had 3 strikeouts against 3 walks. So at the very least, we know that he didn't go out there and dominate them or get completely crushed. It was kind of neutral. But yeah, in this case, I don't know that there's a smoking gun. I mean, both of these guys are very, very similar. You know, the money line will obviously try to give you some insight into who's more likely to get the win. In this case, that seems to favor Weaver, but I don't know. It's just not a clear cut one either way for me.
I was looking into this Weaver game because I was trying to remember if this was a game where the wind was like blowing out or in, and I just can't. There was one crazy game where like it was blowing crazy in, but I knew Quintana was pitching that game, and that was not the one for Weaver. So it's always a little hard to tell like what exactly went wrong. We do know the Cubs are a very patient team, so if you are nibbling around the strike zone against them, you can get yourself in trouble early, and it kind of matters what the weather was like in Wrigley that day, because we know that there are high wind days, and I'm just not able to totally pinpoint what exactly if there was other contextual pieces that may have led to the 6 runs, or if it's just you can just and pitchers just have bad days, it does just happen.
Well, the Cubs just have good hitters too, like right. there's a lot going that can go wrong for you in Wrigley.
Now, any other pitchers that we didn't really touch on today? I mean, I think these are sometimes the hardest.
There's hardly any pitchers today, and I think we touched on all of them.
Yeah, I mean, in these mid-tier guys, I'm saying mid-tier because I'm more referring to DraftKings. FanDuel has really consolidated pricing in a way that does not make it difficult to kind of put together lineups. The fact that you don't have a pitcher, any of these pitchers over 10,000, I mean, at least DraftKings will sometimes make the decisions tougher for you by saying, you know, clearly you know, I don't, you know, I'm not sure exactly where Robbie Ray's 11,000 price tag comes from, but at least they take some of these K guys and put them up in the stratosphere to make you question about whether you should do it. On FanDuel, you're basically, FanDuel at sometimes is just like a pick 'em. I don't really know. The pricing is very, very soft. And considering how important the pitcher spot is, to have all these guys basically be the same price, I mean, I guess that's the tough part of it. I don't really know beyond that, like what I hate to say this because there is skill involved, but the fact that the pricing is so soft, rostering any one of these pitchers that you want and rostering like a bunch of Coors bats is simply just not an issue, even with the Coors pricing differences. Like what I'm saying is, because the pitcher slot is so important on FanDuel, I really, really wish some of these guys were more expensive to make some of the decisions tougher. But alas, this is kind of where we are. All right, and spiel over. Before we get to some of the stacks, let's hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great place to go and play a fantasy contest that doesn't require quite as much of your time investment as it does elsewhere. Because the way NoHalftime works is basically you just pick any player you like for today. So you like Kenta Maeda, you think he's underrated relative to the other pitchers on the slate. You pick him and you pick someone that he can go up against, Robbie Ray or Luke Weaver or whoever else. And you submit that challenge to the app. Other users will scroll through. They'll see if there's anyone else, or you'll see if there's anyone else who wants to accept your challenge. And if so, it's game on. And if not, no big deal. Your money's refunded to you. You can also just go through the app, see what other challenges are out there. Baseball is a great time of year because you can just submit terrible pitchers versus hitters and get a lot of value. And that way, people see names they don't recognize versus Bryce Harper or whatever and go from there. So yeah, check them out, NoHalftime.com. Download the app. Use promo code DFSR on your first deposit and you can get a 50% bonus up to $50.
All right, we have we have a game in course. So yesterday the game in course ended with like an 11 or 11 and a half over, not ended. Went into first pitch with 11 or 11 and a half over under. I forget exactly where it landed, and it lived up to it. They put up 18 runs in the game or something like that. Padres, mostly on the Padres side, Padres put up 13 runs. They were pretty chalky across the board. Guys like Hosmer, Myers, to some degree, Cordero, but not really. Really, those first two guys. And then you had ownership on the usual suspects with Colorado. Now, with today, there are some bad pitchers going, but this game, okay, well, two things. One, we're recording this at 9:40 in the morning Eastern time. Right now, there's no line in this game. I suspect it's because they are evaluating the Padres side of the pitching matchup, which is Eric Lauer. I think that was announced late. So that's my only guess as to why there's no line in this game. I set it for right now at 10.5. It could be 10. It could be 11. I'm not exactly sure. No matter where it lands, it's definitely going to be higher than any. It's most likely going to be at least a run, if not a run and a half or more higher than any of the other game on the slate. Do we just want to completely prioritize this game again? And do you think it's just going to be fairly easy because of the pitching, you know, one, the aforementioned pitching prices, and then two, like even on DraftKings, we've mentioned a couple ways you can get out of pitching pretty cheap. Do you think this game is just is it kind of just cores or bust here today?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things. It's a very, very exciting slate in terms of just how much chalk there will be. Like if you look at, so for instance, our current lineup two on FanDuel, so the lineup that could very well be there when it all comes out in the wash, has five bats from this Coors game and just excellent fill-in bats from other games too, and that and the best overall pitcher on the slate in Kenta Maeda. That type of day is going to lead to some 70-80+% ownership guys. And you know, for me, for cash games, I don't really mind that much. It just means that everyone who doesn't figure out a way to get these guys in is kind of paying the rake. On DraftKings, it's, I think, almost equally or doubly interesting because guys like Velasquez, Weaver, these are excellent pitcher twos for DraftKings. Like, these are normally the type of guys where you're very, very excited to be able to pay down for them because then you can fill in with some of the expensive bats in Coors as well. And today's no exception. I mean, and you don't have to pay $12,000 for a guy like Kershaw or whatever as well. So, yeah, I think cash, you're going to see some overwhelming chalk. But I also think it's a very nice night for big tournaments because everyone is going to be on these guys for big tournaments as well. And games in Coors don't always score 12 runs, right? Like the over-under is 11, but sometimes they just score 5 runs. And there's enough bad pitching going tonight that I actually think you can fade this Coors game pretty safely for big tournaments. I mean, maybe you pick and choose one or two guys, but I think you can fade this game for big tournaments and still make some really excellent high upside lineups too.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a rule in baseball is like there's never a stack or in GBPs that's a must, right? Like that's just not the way baseball works. There's going to be, you know, more often than not, this game is going to finish with the most overall runs. But unlike any other sport, it's not going to finish it. It won't finish it as many times as it would in other sports where the variance is lower. Like, you know, Golden State plays Houston, like 9 times out of 10, that game is just going to end with the most points scored of the whole NBA slate. Like, it's just the nature of the two teams. It's going to be the overwhelming game where there's just the most points scored. Sometimes it won't. But like in cores, yes, it will happen more, but not nearly as much as would warrant maybe some of the ownership. So I think that's just like the one.
Yeah, well, teams get shut out in cores every year, right? And in that case, the variance in baseball, you know, just shines a light on the standard deviation and how it's really incomparable to a game like basketball. Because, yeah, like Houston, Golden State, even if it doesn't score the highest overall total, there's no chance the game will end 50-20 or something like that, right? But, like, right. The Coors game tonight just could definitely end 5-2. Like, teams get shut out in Coors every year. They get shut out in Coors by bad pitching every year. And, of course, in baseball, we're playing our probabilities, but we're mostly doing that for cash games. The ownership thing matters a ton for big tournaments. And on the off chance, call it a 1 in 10 chance that this game ends with the 7th highest total tonight, you don't want any part of that stack if, you know, in a big tournament. And so if it does, then you can cross off 60% of the lineups in big tournaments or something. That's a huge edge. So yeah, it's a nice night for that.
Eric Lauer, he's the pitcher for the Padres tonight. He is a lefty. Now, he has minor league stats. He's not a complete bum like he is projected to be. You know, if you look at some of the prospects and things, he's projected to be a quasi-reliable major league starter without ever being amazing, which is saying something. Like, there's, like, because there are just a lot of bums just that are out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Populating the mound. He does not strike me as one of them. He also doesn't strike me as an elite, like, you know, like I mentioned Walker Buehler yesterday, and a sort of an elite arm like that. So he falls somewhere in the middle. I will say, if you look at some of his pitching makeup from the minors, he does have more fly balls than ground balls. That is bad news when you go into Coors. And he's facing a split where you'd much rather you like when there's the lefties facing the Rockies, because you get Arenado, Story, LeMahieu's probably going to now hit leadoff with Blackman second, and then you get like Ian Desmond, or hopefully Chris Ionetta works his way back into the lineup. He did not play against the lefty yesterday, and there was no note why. I don't know if it was just a rest day, so hopefully he slots himself back in there too. All these guys are excellent plays, and then obviously the Padres, Myers was a chalk play. It stands to reason he will be again against the lefty.
Yeah, 3,400.
Manny Margot, Christian Villanueva. The one note here to just keep an eye on, and lineups are always released early. Christian Villanueva has been excellent this season, but was scratched right before game time yesterday. So I don't know if that's going to make it so that he's not in the lineup today. So the Padres lineup probably will end up mattering for where some of the rest of the value is. And again, this is the game that we just want to stack. Now, you mentioned other guys that we can sort of stack against. I have a question about a couple different pitchers. I don't know if you want to throw out some stacks first, or I can ask you a question. I have two pitchers in particular who we have stacked a lot against in the past and are putting up numbers this season are making me at least question it. Never mind. I was going to say you could just decide.
All right, buddy. I'm fielding questions. Go ahead.
Okay. Jordan Zimmermann lucky for him, he had a great year. Well, not a great year. He was adequate in 2015 and then went off and signed. I had looked this up the other day because I couldn't believe it. He's making, $22 million a year. So he's signed a five-year, $110 million contract. And then the next two seasons, so this is 2016 and 17, struck out less than six guys per nine, had xFIPs like 4.8, 5.4, was just one of the worst pitchers in baseball for two seasons. Like, just awful, awful, awful for 265 innings. And then this year, now 16 innings, so not a huge sample size, but striking out 10 per nine, xFIP down under four, ERA bad, 7.7. The money line says this continues stacking against him. His two seasons worth of being awful says to stack against him. And yet the K's have kind of jumped out of nowhere. Where do you stand when you see numbers like this on a guy who we bum hunted for, I don't know, a couple seasons now?
Yeah, I'm not too enthusiastic about Jordan Zimmermann's apparent turnaround here, at least peripherally. The key indicators on Zimmermann always in the last few years have been the strikeouts, obviously. So, you know, we have basically one start fueling most of this. It was also a start where he happened to get dumpstered and give up three home runs. But since he was just out there for a while, some of the batters he faced hit home runs and some he struck out. But I'm not going to worry too much about that super, super small sample size. The pitching repertoire doesn't appear to be that much different to me. And he's giving up more fly balls. And that's just incredible for our purposes of stacking against him. Because one thing that's been true about Zimmermann over the last several years is the hard contact is just insane. I mean, he went from a 304 BABIP allowed, which is sort of his historical rate, 330 last year, 396 this year. I don't think it's going to... And, you know, sometimes that can be an indicator of bad luck. I don't think that's the case in terms of Zimmermann. I mean, when you combine the increased BABIP with more hard contact and more home runs, and the fact that fewer of the balls that he's allowing to come off bats or rolling on the ground, it just seems like a continued recipe for disaster for him. Sure, like, he might get some strikeouts here and there. I'm not persuaded that he's anyone different than he was the last 2 years based on all this, if only because, you know, again, guys in their age 31 season, after having two bad years in a row, just don't tend to all of a sudden improve again without, you know, switching teams or better pitching coach or some huge change in their repertoire. So yeah, I'm totally comfortable stacking against Zimmerman, particularly in big tournaments where all I'm doing is chasing upside anyway.
Yep. So that would put guys like Adam Frazier at the top of the lineup, even Gregory Polanco. Just he's coming a little bit expensive, but it has some power at the top of the lineup. And they have a couple other lefties, like, well, Josh Bell is a switch hitter, and then Corey Dickerson. So so that's sort of offbeat, because I don't think you're going to see a ton of Pittsburgh stacks out there, but definitely a team that can put up a lot of runs and that is will almost definitely be lower owned. Now, the other guy I want to ask you about is Cole Hamels. So right now the A's have a 4.85-ish expected run line, which is one of the higher non-cores ones that we're going to see on the day. They will feature a lot of righties at the top of the lineup, and they did put up some runs last night. Then you get Cole Hamels, who, sort of like Zimmerman, was awful last year, 6.4 Ks per nine, xFIP hovering around 5. And now he's come out this year striking out. You know, he's had a bunch of strikeouts, so he's striking out close to 11 per nine. The walks are still kind of there, but the xFIP has fallen off about a run and a half. He's down to a 3.45 xFIP. Do we want to take any of the early season gains that we're seeing from Hamels? That he has pedigree, like, has historical pedigree. He's basically had one bad season, which was last year. Like, before that, he was a strikeout per nine guy and a mid threes xFIP, and then the wheels just kind of came off last year. Do we think he's maybe regressing back to what he had been? I mean, the signs are pointing that. And then all of a sudden, if that's the case, then maybe the A's shouldn't have like close to five runs of expectation, because it's just, this is like maybe possibly a live arm again. What are your thoughts here on Hamels? Because I'm a little bit confused. I don't know if I should be swayed a lot by last season or not at all.
Yeah, so when it comes to one bad season, I'm a lot more ready to just call that a little bit of bad luck. You know, one season for a pitcher can just literally mean like you had a blister and that bothered you for most of the year, right? Like, one bad season for a pitcher means hardly anything at all. Pitching is so finicky. It's comes so much down to mechanics, and even the littlest change in your mechanics can cause huge disasters. In the case of Hamels, there's just a lot of conflicting data here, though, okay? So on one hand, yeah, the Ks per nine are up. On the other hand, most of that comes from one game, his second start, where he struck out 11 guys in five innings. On the other hand, that came against these exact Oakland A's. So we know that he, at least in that game, completely and utterly owned them. I mean, the A's look completely lost. He really just crapped all over them, for lack of a better word. On the other hand, he's back in Texas. He's actually only had to pitch in Texas twice this year. In both of those games, he gave up two home runs. He got to pitch in Oakland and Tampa Bay and Houston, which is, you know, not a great place to pitch, but Oakland and Tampa Bay being one of the best pitchers' parks in the two of the best pitchers' parks in the American League as well. So I think there's enough data here that you can be comfortable stacking him against Hamels for big tournaments. I mean, again, it's nice that we basically get the Coors game for free today, so you don't have to decide, like, do you want to stack the A's or do you want to stack, you know, the Padres or Rockies at increased prices? Like, given that you're basically paying the same thing regardless, it looks like you can pretty comfortably stack against stack the Coors game for cash and stack this game for big tournaments. One thing I also just want to keep on my radar here is, yeah, you're seeing an increase in strikeouts for Hamels, but it's also a dramatic increase in home runs allowed. So he's averaging 2.22 home runs per nine so far. He's given up two home runs in three of his five starts and one home run in one of the other ones. And the only one he didn't allow home runs in was the Tampa Bay game at Tampa Bay. So again, a place that's easy not to allow home runs. A lot of times pitchers will try to chase strikeouts, like I mentioned earlier, by pitching up in the zone, which can yield more strikeouts, but also a higher slugging percentage, an isolated slugging percentage. So yeah, there's a conflicting data here. The long story short is, absolutely stack them for big tournaments. You don't need to worry about it too much for cash, but if you decide to play an A or two to fill out your lineup, I think you're doing fine.
Yep, I think I land right in the same area as you. Any other stacks I wanted to bring up those two pitchers, because I always get a little bit weirded out when I see numbers that just don't really line up with some of the stuff that's happened historically. Any other stacks that we did not touch on that you have maybe keyed in on for today, understanding that these would be just like kind of tournament only stuff?
Yeah. Well, I there are a couple other ones, but I do want to kind of just lament in the same way that you were earlier, because tonight should be a night, if these sites were better at pricing, it should be a night where you had tough decisions, like, should you stack against Zimmerman or Hamels, Or should you just try to pay up a little bit for the Coors game? Like, that should be a pretty interesting decision. But the fact that the prices are so out of whack, you know, both the Padres being way too cheap and the top end pitching on the day being too cheap, it just means that you don't have to worry about it. So, yeah, well, like, it's probably good for our wallets. It's kind of, it does make me feel like the thing I miss about baseball sometimes is I'd like to make closer decisions. You know, that's kind of what keeps it interesting. And it is a bummer that it's not closer tonight.
Right, like some of these prices, just a little more, like Chris Iannetta, if he hits second in the lineup, he's $3,500 on DraftKings. Like, he'll be 100% owned. Like, it's just like, it just makes no sense. Anyway, throw out a couple more stacks before we get out of here.
I know. Sorry, buddy. I didn't mean to send you back down the rabbit hole. Just kind of baiting you. It's like saying taxes is theft on the internet or something like that.
Oh, come on. Don't even give me a start.
I'm just going to bring in all the taxes is theft. You get the grammar police and you get the people that just want to bicker on both sides. But anyways, yeah, so there's a couple other bad pitchers going tonight. Dylan Peters, you know, he's going in not so great a hitter's park. So, you know, I guess that's a mark in his favor on some level, but he's just horrendous. I mean, a 5.5 Ks per nine, 5.1 walks per nine so far. The walks per nine last year were 5.5. The guy is simply not major league ready. He looks utterly shook out there, just dancing around the plate. Looks totally uncomfortable, kind of always looking towards the dugout, hoping the manager will come out and get him. So I think you can stack the Dodgers. They're a little bit expensive, but again, in terms of the teams that could just go off and just crush somebody tonight, the Dodgers certainly land in that department for me. And then you just kind of go up and down this list. You can find a number of guys that are sort of uninspiring, but not the end of the world bad. So, like, you got Ian Kennedy going tonight. Not a terrible pitcher in his own... Oh my God, I'm going to die. Not a terrible pitcher in his own right overall, but we definitely a guy that we've seen give up tons of home runs in the past. A guy that can play fast and loose up in the zone and have a lot of damage done to him. So, yeah, those are just kind of a couple ones that I'm... keeping on my radar, I guess, to sprinkle in around some of these other offbeat stacks. I mean, it's worth noting tonight, too, you have, when you scroll down all the games going today, it looks like a lot of games, but given that four games are on that odd 5 o'clock slate, the 7 p.m., the main slate, is actually just a smaller slate than usual for Tuesday. So, you know, the options are somewhat limited overall.
I'm glad you didn't die, buddy, because that would have been a real bummer.
Yeah, I started gagging a little bit. Hopefully, you know, you're not listening to that with your kids. They don't, they're not worried calling the hospital or anything like that.
Yeah, don't call 911 because you're probably hearing this on delay. All right, Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings is the site, dfsr.com/MLB. We'll get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy your core stacks tonight.
Peace.